In this episode of In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics, we're going to talk about Mike Brown's football life, the early years. What was his relationship like with the Cleveland Browns players that his dad, the legendary Paul Brown, coached? I think you find it very interesting. Playing cards with Marion Motley? Come on, man. And then, what kind of a quarterback was he in high school? He played quarterback at Dartmouth. All of that coming your way? You're going to like it.
Welcome to In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. And today, we're at Paul Brown Stadium with Mike Brown, owner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And Mike, appreciate the opportunity to visit very much. And appreciate the opportunity you gave me and my family many years ago to play for the Cincinnati Bengals. And it's been a great experience playing and now broadcasting with the team, and truly appreciate it. But we're going to do a This Is Your Life, Mike Brown. a little football life of Mike Brown here. And I'm sure people are going to hear things that they haven't heard before. We're going to take you all the way back to your high school days. And let's do that first of all. I want to go back even a little further than that. Let's go back to the Cleveland Brown days when your dad was coaching the Cleveland Browns and all the great players that played for the Cleveland Browns. And young Mike Brown, who obviously had a love of his dad and a love of football, what was it like being able to converse and meet these, you know, legends, these heroes of all the kids in that generation?
Oh, they were my heroes. The Browns had a great team and great players. I have so many memories. One that is fond for me is I used to sneak up in the dormitory to the second floor. I wasn't supposed to leave the first floor where I had a dorm room down the hall for my father, but I would sneak up the stairs and go into the room of Marion Motley and Bill Willis, and they would play hearts with me. And the object was to put the Queen of Hearts on Marion, who would guffaw and make a big uproar as though this was a catastrophe and unfair or whatever. And we always would laugh. But they allowed me to play in those games with them. They were very kind about it. At the time, I thought I was just one of the boys almost. And they put up with me, and grateful for that, and I was grateful for it for another reason. I got to know them a little bit on a personal level, if you will, and had real regard for them as people. They were my special heroes, those guys.
How old were you at that time when you were out there playing hearts with those players?
Oh, I would have been 11, 12 years old.
Wow, that's big. That's big. So what's your remembrance of Otto Graham? I mean, I bet you probably had some interactions with Otto Graham, and what an unbelievable player he was.
Yeah, he was a star. He was a great player and a really fine, good person. I asked him to throw me the ball on the sideline before at practice, I recall it that way. And I was maybe 10, 15 yards away, and he threw me the ball and went right through my hands. It was harder than I thought, faster than I thought. And I implored him to throw me one more because I wanted to catch a ball from him, and he did, and I didn't catch it the second time, and I insisted on a third time, and he said, "No, you had your chance."
Is he, of all those Cleveland Brown players, would he be probably the best that you, if you were to evaluate or rate the players, would Otto Graham be number one in terms of caliber of play?
Well, he was their greatest player, and he was, in my mind, the greatest quarterback I ever saw play. I believe that then, and I believe it today. He was very coordinated. He could move and throw the ball. He won. They went to the final game with him, I think, something like 9 straight years, and won about half of those. That's the equivalent of the Super Bowl today. There isn't anybody, maybe Brady, that has come close to such a thing. And he was just a guy who could win, and he won under real pressing circumstances, and he won going away. He won all sorts of different ways, but he was accurate, could find the open guys, and could move and run if he had to. He made the Browns a special team.
He also played in the NBA. He was a guard in the NBA.
He did. He played for Syracuse.
Right.
And Syracuse he was coordinated hand-eye at that level.
No, that's impressive, to say the least. Do you think, like you said, greatest one you've seen, even to this day, some of these great Cleveland Brown players, could they have played in any era?
Oh, yeah. Marion Motley may have been the greatest running back, combination fullback. He could do it all. And I think my dad probably would say he was his greatest back.
Right.
Well, what about Jim Brown? Right. Well, then he would say Jim Brown may have been my greatest running back.
Right.
And Marion could catch. He was a great screen runner, great blocker and protection. Totally reliable as a player. He even played some at linebacker for them in a pinch. And my dad used to tell the story about one game where they put Marion in on the goal line. So he's a middle backer in the goal line. Why? Because he's their best middle backer.
Huh.
And they started shouting to him from the sideline, "Loosen up, Marion," meaning he was too tight to the line of scrimmage. And Marion, oh, and he went like, and they all laughed. But there were these stories that I cherish, like that one, and some of which I was fortunate enough to be privy to around. It isn't that I was doing anything other than just being there, but I was allowed to be there. And so I saw a lot of this stuff, and it became part of my memory, and I have great memories about all of it.
Yeah, I mean, you were up close and personal, a young guy, 11, 12 years old, having contact with these guys on an intimate level. I mean, what are some of the players that you built a relationship with in that regard? What was that relationship like?
Well, I stayed friends with many of them as long as they lived. Dante Lavelli was someone I liked a lot. He was a receiver for the Browns.
Yeah.
He's in the Hall of Fame. So he was a great receiver. He was a good guy as a young kid, player. He was a handsome kid. And I remember he used to scout around at Bowling Green, which is where the Browns held their training camp in their beginning years. And I remember piling into a car with a group of them, and they went out to the local park where Dante's car was parked and shone the spotlight on Dante and whoever else was in the car with Dante. And they thought that was hilarious, and so I thought it was hilarious because, you know,
sure,
if they thought so, it must be. They were kind to me. They allowed me to come up and sit in with them, and oh, it was such that I thought I was one of the gang. They were just being kind to a young boy, and I treasured the relationships I had with them all my life. They're gone now. They were good people. It was a good thing for me to experience. My father taught me early on that everyone deserved the same opportunity, and he believed that. Those guys were they broke the color barrier in pro football, mm-hmm. and I just thought they were guys that were great players. I knew that, and good guys. I knew that, but I didn't think about anything having to do with race or anything having to do with breaking cultural barriers. They were just guys on the team, important players, and good people, and they were kind to me.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, Paul gets recognition for a lot of things, your dad, Paul Brown, but that is something that people don't forget necessarily, but don't think of when they think about everything that Paul Brown did. Like you said, breaking the color barrier, right around the time of Jackie Robinson, was all around that same era, wasn't it?
And it was before.
Yeah,
the year before Jackie Robinson came into baseball, my dad brought Bill Willis and Marion Motley into the Browns.
Oh, the year before.
And one time, many, many years afterwards, we were riding over to the Combine in Indianapolis. My brother Pete, my father and I, and he began telling stories and commenting on his career and his childhood and a wonderful conversation. I wish to God that I had been able to preserve it in some way. But one of the things he said was, as we were driving over, that people like to give him credit for breaking the color barrier. He said he didn't intend anything that had to do with cultural norms. He just thought these guys were the best players.
Right.
And that's why he wanted them, because they would help the team, and they were the best guys to help the team.
Right.
And I wondered about that, and one time Jim Brown remarked on it, and he said that Paul Brown had brought these guys into pro football for the right reason. They were the best people for the job. And that was why they should have been brought in, and not for some cultural reason or statistical reason or whatever else, just because they were the best people for the job and deserved the opportunity. And that's what my father did. He never bragged on it, never talked about it, but he did do it.
At First Star Logistics, we're a very strict company that really puts the pressure on our employees. Brakes? What are those?
That's what I'm talking about, Icky. Get the body right, then the mind's right.
You know. Gotta get that body right.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
Become a star with a chance to earn the highest commission percentages in the industry as a freight broker agent. Check out firststarlogistics.com.
So let's talk about Mike Brown, who is throwing the ball on the sideline with Otto Graham. Now you're in high school and you're playing quarterback. Give me a scouting report on Mike Brown, quarterback.
Oh, I wanted to be a good player. I'm not sure I was. One of the fondest memories I had was as a sophomore in high school. I guess I'm 15 years old. And the sophomore team in those days was separate from the varsity team. We were a year away from being able to play varsity football back then. That's how they handled it at our school. So we were playing our rival, Cleveland Heights. I went to Shaker Heights right next door. They were two communities that We're side by side in the right. suburbs of Cleveland. And we got way behind. And I thought, well, this needed to be changed somehow. So this is in the middle of the game. I told our guys, it was the third quarter. I said, we're behind. We got to catch up. And I'm going to change the offense. And I put in a spread offense on the field. And I said, you just go over here, and you go over here, and you do this, and you do that. You guys block in the normal way. And, well, we went up and down the field. We scored to the point where it was about 28 to 27 or something. We were close. We didn't win, but we came very, very close. And afterwards, I remember our coach said to me, and you know what you did out there. And, of course, I knew what I'd done. Right. He said, don't ever do that again. But he let me do it.
It was working. Yeah, it was working. Okay, so you finish your high school career and you decide to play collegiately and you go to Dartmouth. Why Dartmouth?
Well, they were kind enough to take me in, and I was flattered because that was probably more than I deserved in an academic way. But at one point, prior to going there, I had read these sports magazines, football magazines, and came to know that Dartmouth was losing its quarterback. And I thought, wow, that's a pretty good opportunity for someone like me. The guy up there was graduating. The thing I didn't know, and that wasn't covered in the sports magazine, was that they had two sophomore players that were just coming on. And I found out about that after I got there. But I did manage to play or start by the time I was a senior, and it was a wonderful experience. The guys we had were really top-notch people. They, to a man, led productive, successful lives. They were doctors, lawyers, accountants, business guys, school teachers, school superintendents. They were the whole range of different things. Good people. And I got to know them well. When you play football, even at our level, Ivy League level back then, I swear, one thing you do know is you find out about people. You find out who can try harder than somebody else, who can withstand it better, who competes better. You get to know them on a basis that is special. And I got to know my group of guys and have respected them all my life. Half of them are gone now, maybe more. But they were wonderful people, all of them.
You, well before concussion protocol, you got knocked out in high school, had a serious concussion at the collegiate level. Was there any angst from a family standpoint with respect to these injuries?
Oh, in high school, I have a dim memory of elevating myself. I was going to get a first down, and I decided I'd go over top of the pile. But it ended up that I landed on my head as I came straight down like an arrow. And what I remember was waking up in the locker room on a gurney, and my mother was there, and I told her, you know, she couldn't be there. This was the locker room. But that was one experience, and the other one in college was more ridiculous. I handed the ball off to the halfback, who took it in the old standard fashion, and for some reason his elbow literally hit me just right on the side of my chin and knocked me out.
Really?
But it was one of those knockouts where you aren't conscious, but you're functioning. And they, I guess I did some things that weren't too good. And they took me out of the game, but all I remember is being in the locker room at halftime. And the coach said, Brown, will you be ready to play in the second half? And, oh, yes, coach, I'll be ready to play. I said, but there's one problem. I don't remember any of the plays. If you just give me the playbook, I'll learn it right away. He looked at me and knew better, and that was the end of that.
I'm playing college football. The NFL draft, 1957 draft, Chicago Cardinals. Have an interest in drafting Mike Brown. Tell us about that.
Well, in those days, they had about 30 or 32 rounds. I don't remember. It was the same number. There were fewer teams in the NFL, the same number of picks.
Right.
And you had 3 minutes per pick. And we got to the last round of the picks, and one of the Cardinals representatives came over. In those days, the draft was held in the big ballroom in Philadelphia where the commissioner lived, Burt Bell. He didn't want to travel, so everyone came to Philadelphia for the draft. It was held in this hotel ballroom. Each team had its table, a round table, and they'd have two or three guys, or rarely more, at the table. And my dad was at the Browns table. And this scout or representative from the Cardinals, Chicago Cardinals back then, came over and said to my father, Paul, we would like to draft Mike, but we didn't want to do it unless it was okay with you. And my father said to them, well, I'll make you a deal. If you don't pick him, I won't either. That was, of course, the right decision. I realized that in hindsight. And so ended my NFL career.
Why Cincinnati? I mean, Paul, obviously Ohio State, great success there. Massillon even before that. Cleveland, Cincinnati being in the state of Ohio. Was that a factor?
Hope that you enjoyed part one of Mike Brown, the football story, as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. But stay tuned for part two. It's coming up, and it's going to be Mike Brown, the Bengal years.
Hi, Dave Lapham here. Have you heard about In the Trenches with Dave Lapham, presented by First Star Logistics? Catch new episodes from the world of sports and broadcasting. Search for In the Trenches with Dave Lapham on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.